Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a house. It's your home, the place that's filled with memories. The early days of figuring it out, to the later years of still figuring it out. For the place you've put down roots, trust Amica Home Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg, presented by Clear. Enroll today at clearme.com/Peter and try Clear at the busiest airports nationwide.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. As the world continues to open up to travelers, I sat down with Roger Dow, the president and CEO of the U.S. Travel Association, for an update on global policy and what's really happening around the globe. With Julia Simpson, the CEO and president of the World Travel and Tourism Council, to crunch some real numbers and assess the financial and psychological damage to the travel industry, not to mention to us. And what about the impact on airlines and countries? I'm speaking with the CEO of Air Portugal, Christine Widener, as well as the Secretary of State for Tourism of Portugal, Rita Marques. A lot of necessary ground to cover to help us navigate this brave new world. First up, Roger Dow.
Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
Roger, welcome back. So I guess the question then becomes, where do we go from here? Because it's one thing to say the doors are open. It's one thing to say that people can go. But there are the logistics involved. You have airlines that, you know, flooded the zone with routes, many of which didn't work, right? They've got to reposition. You have airlines that have trouble staffing their flights with pilots and flight attendants. You have cities that may have hotel capacity, but they don't have hotel staff. You have tour operators that want to take you on safari, but they don't have enough folks to drive the Jeeps. So how fast can the recovery recover, I suppose?
I think it's going to be a real challenge because there's so much pent-up demand. These people have been cooped up in their houses and their countries, and they're going to want to travel. And I think it's going to be one of the biggest challenges the industry's ever faced of how do we have enough people to take care of them? How do we have flexibility? And this is going to be the challenge. And people are going to say, why can't I sit in that empty table in the restaurant? And the restaurant will say, because I have no one to serve at that table.
I know. I've been in hotels that had zero housekeeping staff. I've had hotels where there was one woman who worked 2.5 shifts at the restaurant, the world's longest wait for a cheeseburger. I get it. No, but it was terrible. I felt sorry. So you have that as an example. But then there's also reciprocity. Let's go back 2 or 3 months when the European Union opens up to U.S. travelers, but the U.S. doesn't open up to them. And then certain countries in the European Union go, okay, well, you want to play that game. Now we're going to say, even if you're vaccinated, you got to quarantine for 10 days. Or in the case of Sweden, saying, even if you're vaccinated, you can't even come. What's going to happen there?
I think it's going to be one of those games back and forth. And what you do, my folks, will do to yours. And I think you're exactly right. And people are going to do that. We're also going to see the over-tourism rear its head. The people have gotten used to, sadly say, of not having all the visitors in their town, and they kind of like it. They can get in the local restaurant, and now when they can't get in the restaurant, they're going to start complaining about the tourists.
You can't keep everybody happy. It's as simple as that. It's a double-edged sword of economy and lifestyle, mm-hmm. Right?
No question about it.
I mean, look, we have Venice already on the verge of putting turnstiles in St. Mark's Square. They're already going to start charging an entrance fee into Venice if you're not staying at a hotel starting next year, anywhere from £3 to £11 a person. That's not going to go over very well. You have Venice banning cruise ships from the lagoon, right? And everybody says, we don't want to become another Venice. And Venice says, we don't want to become another Barcelona. Well, here we are in Portugal. Portugal had a banner year in 2019. And I happen to think they took a lot of things for granted because they thought it was going to happen in 2020, and it didn't. Now we're moving into 2021. Where does reciprocity fit in there? Because they're now all competing for the same market.
There's no question about it. You know, but one of the things that came out of the pandemic is with domestic travelers is they found new places. People are looking for the outdoors. People had never thought of going to a national park, never thought of going to Moab in Utah and all these places. And a lot of places that were off the beaten path have now been discovered. And I think that's good for the travel industry.
And then what does it mean in terms of airfares? I'll give you an example. 2 weeks ago, before this announcement was made, I'm going to go domestic and then international. My domestic airfare from Dallas one way to LaGuardia on American Airlines on a usually heavily traveled business travel flight was $48.20. My airfare from from JFK to Los Angeles a week later on Delta was $68.20. The cab fare from Manhattan to JFK was $72. Then you had the international flights, and that's where things started to change because there were about 90 different city pairs between the U.S. and Europe where LAX to Madrid or New York to Finland, all of them were under $340 round trip. Well, here we are today. Those fares are not those fares anymore because once that door was opened, now those airfares are like L.A. to London, which was like $340 round trip, is now $1,600 in coach, right? Dallas to Madrid is up to $2,000. Who's paying those fares?
How many times have I been on your show during the pandemic and said, smart people, book now, you're never going to see these rates again, and what you predicted is now coming true. It's going to be tough for people to find. And the other thing is, I had one flight that my assistant put me on a later flight than I wanted. I said, well, there's an earlier flight. The flight she put me on was $240. The earlier flight was $1,340. Same city pair, but the earlier flight.
And well, I'm going to say something
made
now.
No sense.
Well, I'll tell you why it makes no sense, because it gets into the individual inventory in different buckets at different online travel agencies. If you're going to make your reservation online and you see a little tag on that fare saying only three seats left, that's a lie. There's only three seats left in the inventory that they were given, their allocation from the airline. Why wouldn't you pick up the phone and call the airline directly? I know people they've lost the art of the conversation, but that's where I found my $48 fare. It wasn't online. And not only that, when I went back online, there was one $48 fare, and the next fare jumped to $900 for reasons that no one can understand. It's based on the allocation that they've been given, not the actual number of really available seats that the airline is holding at any one time.
And when you get that person on the call from the airlines, if you're nice and you ask them, I'd like to go here, when is the best fare? And they'll come up with a fare that you wouldn't even see on the internet, because the date you're looking at, maybe a day later, it's half price.
Well, I'm going to tell you my old MO, which still works today. When you call the airline and you say, let's say, I want to go from, I'll give you the example, Dallas to New York, they're going to say, when do you want to travel? Don't answer that question. Instead, say, can you look on your screen and tell me, scroll through all the fares, what's the lowest fare you've got, period? And they'll go, oh, it's $48. Okay, great. What are the restrictions? It can only be on a Wednesday at 2 a.m. Your middle name has to be Murray. You'll go, okay, I'll do it. I'll change my name. I'll get a snowmobile. Whatever you need to get that fare. So you back into the fare without volunteering where you want to go. Well, all of a sudden you get stepped up to a higher fare.
No question about it. Once you tell them the date you're going, you're going to get that fare and you're not going to hear about the others.
So as long as you can be flexible, things are going to be okay. But you have to still be flexible quickly, because remember, the airlines overseas have been operating essentially on a one-way basis. U.S. passengers going overseas, nobody coming back to fill a lot of those seats. And as a result, those airfares had to drop, or they were flying a lot of cargo. Right now, they're not flying a lot of cargo. You are the cargo, and the foreign travelers are the cargo. That means the airfares have nowhere to go but up. Make those bookings now. Think 330 days out, actually, and at least protect yourself.
I totally agree. Book now and book far out.
My thanks to Roger. When it comes to lobbying for change and then monitoring policy in arguably the largest industry in the world, travel and tourism, one group is at the forefront, the World Travel and Tourism Council. And the person leading this organization, Julia Simpson, knows the economic and political impact of the business. The numbers are, to say the least, staggering, both in terms of loss and, perhaps some good news, promise. Julia, welcome.
Peter, welcome. Lovely being with you.
So here's the real question. I mean, if you take a look at the numbers, right, it's travel and tourism, the largest industry in the world, 1 out of every 10 jobs before the pandemic, 1 out of every 5 new jobs. On a global average, maybe 11% of global GDP, but there are some countries that are up to 40. I mean, we're talking not just tourism-dependent, we're talking tourism-driven economies. When you think about all that, we have some real issues here as the world tries to come to grips with coming back to travel as people begin to emerge from COVID-19.
You're absolutely right, Peter. I don't think people always understand how valuable travel and tourism is to our economy and jobs. I mean, globally, we've probably lost 162 million jobs. And it's how we're going to get those jobs back. As you quite rightly said, we're talking about a $10 trillion global business pre-pandemic. And we've seen 50% of that, more or less, wiped off the face of global wealth. So in some countries, this is really serious. It's about putting bread on the table.
Literally. I mean, if you take a look at some countries, and Africa being, continents, in fact, being a good example, Egypt being part of that as well. You can literally follow the money. You can connect the dots to realize that if Mrs. Jones from Cleveland doesn't show up, 8 families don't eat.
Exactly. I mean, at the World Travel and Tourism Council, we represent something like over 200 of the really top companies in travel and tourism. But we also represent the 80% that are small businesses, often family-run businesses, that, you know, are really being impacted by this. You've also got to remember that travel and tourism, over 50% of the people that work in the industry are women. They come from ethnic minorities. They are often first jobs. This has really, really hit them hard.
So how do you get around it right now? Because wherever I've been going over the last 5 months, it's not new, I'm in hotels that aren't staffed. I'm in hotels, and some hotels had no housekeeping whatsoever, no restaurants open, no other essential services, and yet the hotels were desperate to stay open. And it's this double-edged sword of how do you keep a hotel open when you can't provide the service?
Exactly. It's been a real challenge. I think if you're traveling around Europe now and the UK, you will see things are open. I mean, obviously, UK, Europe, we've got sort of around 80% of adults have been double vaccinated. So you are seeing it. But it's a very varied picture around the world. If you're going to Australia, New Zealand, these economies are still effectively got the close sign outside their door. And I think really, probably the US is somewhere in between. So, you know, what we at WTTC have been saying, we've been calling on governments. We understand that they've been focused very, very internally inside their borders, but they got to put their eyes up now and look internationally and try and connect the world again.
I mean, so for example, I'm an American citizen. I can come to the United Kingdom. You're a UK citizen. You can't come back to America.
Exactly. And if you look at that on health grounds, it's kind of illogical, isn't it, Peter? Because if you travel from the US and you go around the UK completely free and you go home, how does that make you any less of a risk than if a double vaccinated UK citizen came to your wonderful shores?
Okay, so now you're giving me the logical argument. What happened to logic?
Well, you know, I think where there's fear, there's logic often goes out the window. And I also think when you're talking, businesses are very agile. Businesses and travel and tourism have really responded agilely to this. But governments, by their very nature, tend to be a little bit less agile. And they've tied us up in a lot of red tape because there's the real pent-up demand for travel. I think at the beginning of the pandemic, people were genuinely fearful. But I think now there's a real pent-up demand. Travel and connecting with people is in our DNA. And we've got to get back to doing this. And while we're thinking about it, maybe from a leisure aspect, you've got to remember the impact on business. Because business, particularly that transatlantic travel corridor, it is the biggest business. It's the richest travel seam in the world, and it's currently almost closed.
All right, so now I'm going to shift gears to an issue that was with us before the pandemic, and you would think that during the pandemic, as with so many other businesses, people would have had a chance to rethink, reset, reprioritize, and that is first and last impressions make a deal here, right? The first impression you have of a country when you enter, the first or the last impression you have when you leave. We are seeing immigration lines at border patrol, at border crossings in the UK, at the airports, in Portugal, in so many other countries, 5, 6, 7 hours to get in, 5, 6, 7 hours to get out. This is not a news bulletin. This was going on before the pandemic. What happened to governments understanding that there is a true connection between your border crossing guys, your immigration and customs, and the country itself in terms of the tourism experience?
You're completely right. I sometimes think, though, you need to break something to realize how you need to fix it. I just traveled back from Portugal. I was very lucky. Coming back to the UK, I came through quite swiftly. A lot of the checks were done in Portugal before I boarded my plane. But where I think this needs to go is into contactless travel. If Peter, you and I get on a bus or we get on, we call them tube trains here in London, the metro, you know, I just have a contactless QR code on my phone. I don't even have to touch anything. I don't have to exchange any money. And for international travel, this will be the way forward. Clearly, you have to have the proper safety checks
of course,
and the security checks, but there's no reason reason that can't be digitalized. And I take my hat off to the US, because they had got the airports in the US had become much more digital. In the old days, you used to queue for a long time. So we don't want to go back to the old days. We're heading forward, and I am sure that there will be a contactless digital solution that will, if you like, be the phoenix that rises from these ashes.
Well, part of that solution, I hope, will be something called pre-clearance. Because it's been around since 1952. If you're flying back to the U.S. from the Bahamas or from Bermuda or from Ireland or from Canada and many other countries, you clear U.S. Customs and Border Protection in the country where you're leaving from, so that after an 11-hour flight, you're not on line for 3 hours. You've already been cleared. They already know you're on the plane. You've already passed customs. You just get your bags and go home. Or if you're connecting flights, you just go to your next flight. It's so simple. The two places I wish they would do it is Heathrow and Charles de Gaulle. I mean, that would be my lobbying efforts, to do pre-clearance in those countries, because it would make a huge difference.
I think pre-clearance is a great idea, as long as it's done digitally. What you don't want to do is swap the queues getting into the US for great big pile up of people in airports in Charles de Gaulle, in Heathrow. So as long as you can do it smartly, I think pre-clearance is the way ahead.
What's your biggest challenge now coming into WTTC? You're the new CEO.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Well, the biggest challenge is to really get us flying again and get us connecting internationally. I'd love to be able to say that this pandemic is over. There is massive pent-up demand. But as I was saying, there are parts of the world that are still closed. So we need to connect people. We need to connect them smartly. And why do we want to do that? Because this isn't just about connecting people and businesses and families that have been torn apart, not seen each other for 2 years. It is also about the economy, stupid. You know, these mean real jobs to real people. And governments have stepped forward and they brought in things like furlough schemes, but those inevitably are going to have to come to an end. One of the big challenges for the industry is actually going to be man and woman power. You know, manpower, because we're not sure we've necessarily got enough people that have left the industry that will be able to come back. So that is a challenge, but I think it's a short-term challenge. And I'm very confident that the industry will, you know, step up and be able to embrace all the people that are flying around again. And Peter, it's great news now that the US has actually opened up to the UK and Europe. It was illogical before, because we had the US. You were a US citizen, you could travel freely maybe to the Caribbean and Mexico, which I think is absolutely fantastic, but you couldn't, the Brits and people in Europe couldn't travel back the other way, even if they had like 80% vaccinated. I think the brave and correct step that your president, Mr. Biden, has taken is great news. Chapeau to him.
My thanks to Julia. Perhaps one of the best case studies of how a country and an airline adjusted to COVID-19 is Portugal, where the economy is not just tourism-driven, but tourism-dependent. And let's not forget, in 2019, Portugal was the hot destination for travelers, enjoying unprecedented growth, and then came COVID-19. And without airlift, a country like Portugal can easily fail. Christine Widner is the CEO of Air Portugal and talks about the lessons learned and then applied. Christine, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for welcoming me today.
You know, you have such a fascinating background. I mean, you started in the maintenance department at Air France on the Concorde.
Yes.
And that was a high-maintenance airplane.
It was, but I'm very lucky. I think that having started a career already with a passion for the industry and starting on an aircraft like this one was definitely, for me, a real pleasure and challenge, as you said. But after this experience, that was it.
And then you joined the executive ranks.
Yes, and it was also an experience between maintenance, IT, and then commercial. So, and all these experiences prepared me for the executive functions, because I had the opportunity to work in a number of different departments, very complex industry.
In Air France, and then KLM, and then Flybe, and before that, CityJet, and now TAP.
TAP, Lisbon, Portugal.
And TAP, one of the legacy European carriers, one of the legacy European flag carriers. I remember when TAP didn't have the range to get to Lisbon and would stop in the Azores for fuel. That was in the 50s and the 60s. and they were flying, I remember TWA at the same time, they were flying Constellations. Now you're flying state-of-the-art advanced planes like the A321neo.
Yes, and we are now even, you know, flying with narrow bodies from Lisbon with our A21LR to New York. So that's something we are very proud of because it's a very modern aircraft, very fuel efficient, but also very good, you know, aircraft for the crisis we are all going through, because narrow bodies are more flexible than wide bodies. So, yes, a lot of things that have changed, new technologies, and we are flying these new generations.
Well, you mentioned the crisis, so now that you've opened the door, let's talk about the crisis. Airlines, you know, it's the old, you know, Freddie Laker line, which then Richard Branson co-opted, which is, if you want to become a millionaire, start with $1 billion and open an airline, you'll become a millionaire. It's a very volatile business in terms financially prior to the pandemic.
Yes, it was already a very volatile industry, and the pandemic, you know, has been very, you know, it was a really deep crisis of the industry on a global basis. 9/11 was a significant crisis. SARS was also another one. But compared to this crisis, nothing could be compared.
Because this is global.
It's global. The financial impact is definitely massive, and TAP has been hurt like a number of airlines, and we are still trying to recover.
In America, if you take a look at the business model of the legacy carriers, American, United, Delta, they were built really on business travel, selling that front cabin at a premium price, and then everything in the back was nice and incremental, but if you couldn't sell the front of the cabin, you could have people sitting on the wings in coach, and you weren't making a lot of money. We've seen what's happened now. As travel's coming back, it's being led by the leisure sector, not by the business sector, and prices have come down. They haven't gone up. I mean, a price right now, if you want to fly round trip from Los Angeles to Madrid, it's $324. That's unheard of, right? I was on a flight the other day where the cab ride to the airport was more expensive than the flight. At a certain point, you reach a point of diminishing returns until you can turn things around. And are we at a point, and I'm not talking about TAP, as I'm talking about the airline industry, where we define a successful airline by which can lose money longer?
I don't think so, because that would not be sustainable. I think that we have first to restore the demand, and today our customers are still, you know, not sure they want to travel. They don't want to travel the same way they were traveling before. They don't want to travel maybe as many times as they were traveling before. And it's not only a question of price. I think the pandemic has been changing a lot of behaviors, expectation of our customers.
Give me an example.
Well, let's say digital and the way they want to be in contact with airlines. Before the pandemic already, our customer wanted to do most of the transaction online, but all the servicing, you know, should be done online. And during the pandemic, because also of all the contactless development, we had to invest more. We had to be to develop more innovation, to develop all this digitalization of the experience. That's one side. On the other side, they still want to keep in contact when it's going wrong.
They want to talk to you.
Absolutely. So we have seen a quite significant increase in number of calls that most of the airlines have been struggling to manage, and that is causing also some delays in answer. And we're still rebuilding it because calls are still there. So because when you have a doubt or you feel insecure in the way you will travel, you want to have information online, but quite a number of customers wants to be in contact with a human being.
They want to have their hand held.
Yes, they want, and it's absolutely understandable, but I think it's a mix of both. A number of things could be dealt online, but a number of things will be and will have to be better handled with human beings.
You know, one of the definitions of great service is not when you deliver the service, but when something goes wrong, how you recover. So many of the online travel agencies during the pandemic did not recover well because they had no staff to talk to people, and people lost faith. And what we saw, almost coming full circle, was the rise in dependency on travel agents, because they could have a conversation with the travel agent, they could advocate for them, they could figure out plan A and plan B and plan C that you couldn't do online. And so we're seeing a resurgence of popularity, not only of travel agents, but of customer behavior, as you say, where 67% of passengers, at least in the United States, are saying they'd feel more comfortable talking to a travel agent than going online, which is not the model that anybody else is following.
I think it's unpredictable, but also it's a way to test how far we can go with a model or another. And I think it's the right balance between digitalization and human contacts. And crises have always put in more emphasis on human contacts. And that's what we are meaning. Maybe it will be a more human experience than before. And that's good, because I think that travel has to remain an amazing experience. This crisis proved to us that customer experience, customer confidence is important. I think as an industry, some airlines did better than others. I joined TAP a few months ago, and we are still rebuilding this customer experience. And I think we need to invest more in the future, and what the team is doing now.
What we saw in the United States is that as airlines started to come back online and people started to travel domestically, they doubled and tripled down on their routes. They were planning to go places that were never on their route maps before. Any place that was adjacent to a national park suddenly got air service, right? Everybody wanted to go to an outdoor place where they could breathe. So all of a sudden, overnight, you had 7 or 8 airlines announcing service to Bozeman, Montana. It was like, what is going on with Bozeman, Montana? And I understand that. But now if you have a situation where you're flooding Bozeman, Montana with 200,000 seats a month, and there are only 2,000 hotel rooms in all of Bozeman, you've got a problem, right? And probably what we're going to start seeing in the next couple of weeks and months ahead is service leaving Bozeman because it can't be supported. In your route system at TAP, you know, used to have a much more robust system. You used to fly to Asia, Africa. Where are you now adjusting to meet that passenger demand for wide open spaces and places where they can feel safe?
Our core network is flying, through a hub of Lisbon to North America, South America, and Africa. That are really three long-distance destinations. We also fly and connect Portugal mainland to the islands such as Madeira and Azores. But we have three decisions. I must say that Africa has been quite, stable and less volatile than the two other areas of the world. South America has been challenging, and for us, we are speaking mainly Brazil, and Brazil has a quite amazing destination. Now we see a recovery in Brazil because more and more countries are opening the border. Brazil, North America is still a challenge for us because the borders are not open.
Well, it's a one-way situation
exactly.
Right now.
Exactly, so that's a challenge. And we
hope
that.
How do you fight that? How do you fix that?
We try to be flexible, and that's what all airlines are doing. You have to be agile on the capacity, the frequency, so you keep the destination.
Let me guess, passengers one way, cargo the other.
We have cargo, absolutely. And we also find other destinations that are open.
We all have busy lives these days, and we don't want to waste a day recovering after a night out. That's why ZBiotics is the answer we've all been looking for. Their probiotic was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. This is a proactive solution that wards off feeling miserable the next day instead of a reactive approach like drinking electrolytes or eating greasy food. Enhance your mornings with ZBiotics. Go to ZBiotics.com/CBS to get 15% off your first order when you use code CBS at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/CBS and use the code CBS at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
You mentioned the Azores, and I want to do a shout out to those guys. The 9 westernmost islands in Europe. What a secret, hidden destination. It's frozen in time. I love it. I can't get enough of it. If you haven't been there, I mean, you need to go. And to give you an idea of how special the Azores are, I'll just give you one example, and it's going to come as a surprise to most of you. They still have bullfights there, but they're not really bullfights. They're sort of like bull chases, and the bull doesn't die. It's the most interesting spectator sport I've seen in a long time, because the bull does run after people. And you better be behind the barrier, but it moves from village to village to village. You never know. You have to ask, what village is it going to be in today? And all of a sudden the truck pulls up and here comes the bull. But the food, the fish, unbelievable. And I have to give you a shout out for that, because as people are looking for destinations with social distancing baked in, with an affordable destination, I mean, you couldn't do better than the Azores.
Yes, it's a wonderful destination, and I think that when you look at this destination, if you talk about wild spaces, being able to do trail or hikes, it's amazing. And there are a lot of destinations like that in Portugal, so to promote the destination, thank you so much. But I was in Madeira last weekend. We had a wonderful time, because you can absolutely have these wild spaces, amazing food and travel.
Although I must tell you, if you're landing in Madeira, the pilots who fly to Madeira are a special breed, because it's a little windy on the landing. I'm telling you, the landings and takeoffs in Madeira, that's the e-ticket ride at Disneyland, I'm telling you.
Yes, but as you know, we have... I would say our procedures, our new aircraft, and I think that it's a special landing, but with special procedure, with captain only landing in Madeira.
You see, I call it a wild landing, and Christine called it a special landing. I like that. Okay, good. But now let's talk about some other routes and things that you've done in the past, because prior to your arrival at TAP, there was a time where if you flew to Lisbon, you had 45 other destinations you could tag on in your routing for a nominal amount of money. What a great idea that was. Are you still doing that?
Now, what we put in place is working very well, is stopover. So
that's what I'm talking about, right.
And we do that up to 5 days today, meaning that if you fly through Lisbon, you can spend a few days in Lisbon, and it's included in your connecting itinerary. So, and it's giving the opportunity, for instance, for tourists coming from America to do a fantastic stop in Lisbon. They could even go when in Lisbon either to Azores or to Madeira,
there,
and then
go fly
in other places in Europe. So that's and that's all included in one ticket.
Now, I have an admission to make. I'm somewhat of an addict when it comes to this. Do you know why I stop in Lisbon? For one thing, chocolate mousse at Pop Sorda. I'm sorry, I do. For those of you who have ever had chocolate mousse at a restaurant, you know how disappointing it is when they serve you the chocolate mousse in this little baby champagne glass, a little baby spoon. That is not the case at this restaurant. Mm. You walk in, and they have great seafood, but you're there for the dessert. And you only order chocolate mousse. That's the only thing I'm going to allow you to order. And you go there, and you order the chocolate mousse, and you're sitting there waiting for this little champagne glass. And all of a sudden, there's a tap on your shoulder, and there's a waiter standing there with a huge bowl and a ladle the size of, like, Texas. And... They just pour it. It's like, you need to go home on a stretcher. That's true. You'll be taking a long nap. But the point is, I never go to Lisbon without doing that. That's my stop. Sorry.
Yes. Portuguese hospitality, quality of the food, quality of the wine. I think that that's what our customers are discovering the first time they arrive in Portugal. And that's why also they are coming back. And there are many other traditions, such as a custard tart, so what you can, taste in Portugal, nowhere else in the world. So I've been, it's very dangerous for your diet, to be honest.
Yes.
But it's a wonderful country.
And I'm going to tell you this as a compliment. Portugal, to me, is the kingdom of a dead empire. And if you ask most Portuguese what's going on, the tendency over the last couple of years was to talk about Vasco da Gama. That's about it. It's cool, it's honest, it's open, it's affordable. And because of a route network that you have, you can go to a lot of places, including Africa.
Absolutely. And we are trying to welcome also a customer on board with exactly the same kind of hospitality. We say with our arms open, because it's also the Portuguese tradition to be very friendly. They also are, everywhere in the world. So there is a huge diaspora of Portuguese everywhere in the world. So there's also this tradition of welcoming people coming
from
everywhere.
You go to Boston, Portuguese. You go to Hawaii, Portuguese, because you were the fisherman.
Absolutely, and the navigators, and you know, a lot of discovery thanks to the Portuguese, explorers. So this tradition and also this ambition to welcome culture from everywhere in the world is still there. And I'm very amazed to see our Portuguese in my organization, but also in the country, have kept this in their DNA. So, and that's also what is with this country. One of the reasons why it's one of the best country to travel to. Either for leisure, of course, for any kind of leisure, but also from businesses, more and more corporations and organizations are deciding with remote work and also a fantastic condition to move their organization to Portugal because it's
people
a fantastic
can do that now.
Place. Absolutely.
Okay, now I won't let you go with asking one question. The next time I get on a TAP flight, will you promise me that dessert will be chocolate mousse?
I can try.
My thanks to Christine. Portugal is also a role model for government policy in the COVID era. But as Rita Marquez, Portugal's Secretary of State for Tourism, argues, she had to make sure the country stayed focused on all the sustainability and environmental impact issues that confronted it before the pandemic in order to emerge from it. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
You know, Portugal to me right now is a role model of how to behave in COVID. You were one of the first countries to open. You were one of the first countries to stay open. And along with Greece, you sort of led the way for the other European Union countries to follow.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do that? I mean, because remember, you're dealing with COVID-19 concerns, fears, Delta variant, vaccination levels, all those things that go into a decision.
Absolutely. It was a very hard decision. So we had the presidency of the European Council back in January this year. So we had that for 6 months till June. And we wanted to lead by example, basically. And so we thought that it could be a good idea to materialize the European certificate for COVID. So we try very much to be focused on
basically
that.
Basically the vaccine passport.
Correct. Basically but at the time there was no many vaccines. So we were taking care of that issue, but at the same time, very much eager to bring vaccines to Europe and to have the vaccination rollout as smooth as possible. So going back to the question, we wanted Portugal to be in their leadership, so basically on this, together with Greece, together with Spain, all those countries that depend on tourism. We do have a lot of workers in this sector, and so we fight back very severely in order to have this done by the end of June, so that's when we leave the presidency.
You know,
we left the presidency.
It's interesting to note that in 2019, you had a record year. Portugal was the hot destination, no doubt about it. And sometimes it's easy to take tourism for granted, or to just think it's going to continue. And then all of a sudden, here comes the pandemic and the bottom falls out. That was a big hit.
Yeah, you know, the world stopped, basically. It was not only tourism. All of us stopped. Basically, we were confined at our homes. And so it's still huge, a huge impact on the sector. But let me go back, because previous to the numbers, the great numbers we had back in 2019, because as you said, we had a record year, we had already committed ourselves to a new agenda for tourism. So in 2017, we launched the strategic plan for tourism here in Portugal. It was a private and public homework. So basically it was, you know, all the peers, all the leaders that somehow were related to the industry that commit themselves to a new standard of tourism. And with the pandemic, this pandemic alerted us showed us that this plan is really important. The priorities that we set at that plan are really important, and we need to guarantee that we have tourism all year round. That's the first objective. The second
But that's interesting you say that, because I remember talking to your counterpart in Greece a couple of years ago, and she was saying that they thought that their solution was to just extend the season, mm-hmm. to spread out the numbers, because everybody's talking about over-tourism. So that was already one thing that was already in play, but it didn't take into account the the fact that nobody was coming at one point.
No, yeah, for sure, yeah. But we have basically three objectives. So that was one of them. So have tourism all year round. But there are other objectives is to have tourism all over all over Portugal, not only in the cities, but in the rural areas. And the pandemic showed that if we have installed capacity, for instance, in the rural areas, we are able to deliver tourism, a type of tourism that people seek after the pandemic, you know, freedom, calm
they
places.
Want to breathe.
Yeah, of course, the mindset has changed. A lot of mindfulness, also, you know, to for us to conclude what is our role in this planet. How can we contribute to the future generations? And so this was the second objective. And the third one was to diversify our markets and to guarantee, an excellent service, always, you know, value-added service. And this was our last objective. So altogether, these three objectives continue to be very adequate, very useful. And so we'll come back alive and kicking for sure after this pandemic.
When you talk about the mindset has changed, give me an example of how passenger or traveler behavior has changed in the wake of the pandemic. What are they demanding now? What are they expecting now?
You know, they are very attentive to sanitary rules, that's for sure. But most of all, they are very determined in finding a nice accommodation that lets them breathe. Basically, you know, so don't annoy so much the customer, let them, enjoy the place, not interrupting him or her several times, giving him or her a good service, but not very, how can I say, very active service, always, right. You know. So they like to be pampered, but in a kind of passive way, you know what I mean? And this is kind of, you know, a consequence of our strategy and, of course, the pandemic. Altogether, I think, you know, we are moving to this focus on being more social minded, environmental minded, and that's the new tourism, I would say, the new world also.
Of course, many of your counterparts in many other countries of the world traditionally depend that it was a numbers game. How many visitors per year? What was their average stay? What was their average spend? That's got to be thrown out the window now.
Absolutely. I guess companies will immediately understand or are starting to understand that for the balance sheet, we have to have some, you know, business numbers, revenues and all that. But we have to have also in the balance sheet the social impact of that company, the environmental impact of that company, because if they don't do that, they would lose their license, they would lose their customers, and they will lose their investors, you know. So it's not only a question of client relationship, it's also a question of government with government relationship, because they will lose their licenses, basically, and also investors relations, all the stakeholders. So this is something that the companies, not only the companies and the customers, should be very attentive at.
Of course, there's always this double-edged sword, because if you're an airline, you want to fill every seat on the plane, right? You got to get as many people on the plane as you can to get to Lisbon or the Algarve or anywhere, right? And yet that sort of like flies in the face of what you're just talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, they want to have a profitability. I understand that. But in the long term, if you are running the marathon, you know, this is not a sprint. So if you are running the marathon, they have to be profitable economically, financially profitable, but they want to have, you know, a good relationship with investors, customers, all that, with the governments as well, with the public sector. And in order to achieve that, they have to open up their minds and increase sustainability mindset, include the sustainability mindset in the business model.
And how successful have you been in changing the minds of those operators and those investors?
I'm going to be, you know, straightforward in my answer. Yeah, we do have some issues, especially because, as you can imagine, here in Portugal, we have a lot of SMEs. And for the big SMEs, small and medium enterprises.
Thank you.
So we do have, you know, tourism sector, a lot of small and medium companies, a lot of entrepreneurs, family-owned business. And this is really something that we need to work on, because for the big names, for the big brands...
They can sort of do it.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to have a chief happiness officer. It's easy to have a chief...
I would like to have a chief happiness officer.
No, but a chief sustainability officer, whatever. But for a SME, for a small and medium company, is not really the case. So here the government has to define, you know, public policies, give them kind of grants, give them fiscal incentives, trying to instigate them to adopt this new mindset in the business model. And this takes time. And I have to tell you, it's not only about the entrepreneur or the businessman or woman, it's also about the workers, because now we are fighting hard to find talents in the sector. So, you know, we do have a scarce talent in the sector. And what we are figuring out is that a lot of people, when they think about the sector, they don't accept any offer. They accept the best offer, meaning that sustainability also plays in the equation. So it also is a piece, you know, of the equation. So because people tend to accept offers from those companies that do have a shift happiness officer or a chief sustainability officer.
Okay, that settles it. I'm getting a chief happiness officer. I have to have it. No, but in all seriousness, it's another challenge that you have, which you're not alone in. The United States, big problem in terms of finding the people to actually do the jobs. There's a labor shortage right now.
Yeah.
And people aren't really coming back to work. I've been in some hotels where the housekeeping staff was zero. I've been in some hotels that had no restaurant. I've been in some hotels that basically said, housekeeping's coming once every 4 days, if you're lucky. That's redefining hospitality.
For sure, yes, but we still need the human resources. So yes, we need to upgrade, and that's an upgrade. I think that's an upgrade because it fits with the trends.
The pandemic allowed a huge population percentage to reassess their own lives. You know, it's. I've always said that if you go to a restaurant in Portugal or Italy or France, the waiter there, that's not just his job, that's his profession. And it's something that maybe his father did or his brother did. It's something that he's proud to do and he does it well, right? In America, it's an out-of-work actor waiting for a movie. Mm-hmm. So when you have a pandemic hit, at least in the United States, these people may not come back. Right, we talk about jobs at risk economically. How about just jobs at risk towards the definition of the terms of what they want to do for a living? Here, you have an economic impact to get them back. There's a difference because they are professionals here. So how do you deal with that challenge? How do you incentivize people in the wake of the pandemic to come back to work?
We have to work in several dimensions. So first of all, we have to train the entrepreneurs, the businessmen and women, alerting them to the new recruitment policies. For instance, how can you value the professionals that work in the area, for instance? How can you pay more to them as well? Because, you know, it's also about earnings at the end of the day.
Right, but then the double-edged sword there is once you pay more, then it costs more for people to come here.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, a couple of minutes ago, we were discussing about the parameters. How can you evaluate business? And, this, you know, we can evaluate business on not on the number of people that you are hosting, but also on the receipts that you are making, right? So we need to shift a little bit the idea. We have a limit, for sure, for the number of guests that you are able to host. But going back to the question, I think we have to involve, of course, the entrepreneurs, the businessmen, the management, but we also have to open up the possibility to integrate migrants, for instance. And that has been a solution for a while here in Portugal.
It's what built America.
We know, and that's what was built Portugal, in fact. We were explorers, so we were, you know, we are a country that has always been open to others. And tourism and migration are pretty much two globalization phenomena, right? They are very much related. And if we incentivate, promote, foster tourism here in Portugal, we cannot abandon the possibility to also to instigate and foster and nurture and pamper migration. So, for instance, what we have been doing in our schools, in our Turismo de Portugal schools, our National Tourism Board, we have been organizing several specific programs for refugees, for instance, migrants, helping them to be integrated into society, but not losing their values, their authenticity, their identity. And the balance has been amazing. So we are quite happy with that experience, and we'll continue for sure to work on that dimension.
Well, perhaps America can learn from you.
Well, who knows? We can also learn with Americans for sure. I think, you know, it's a take and give also.
Of course, back in February of 2020, the word that was on everybody's agenda was over-tourism. We've seen now, as we've come out of the pandemic a little bit, what's happened in Venice, banning the cruise ships from the lagoon, putting in everything short of a turnstile in St. Mark's Square. Have you gotten to that point in Portugal yet?
That's a very tricky question. We don't want to get to that point, but we need to be flexible enough to react if we are ready, you know, if we are pretty much close to that point. And Venice case is needs to be an alert to all other countries, and we have that issue with Barcelona, for instance.
Everybody says they don't want to become another Barcelona.
I know.
And then Barcelona says they don't want to become another Venice.
That's correct. And we don't want to become another Venice and Barcelona. So we have been very attentive to that situation. We need to avoid that situation here in Portugal, but I'm not going to hide that it might happen in Lisbon specifically. Of course, we can bring technology on. We haven't talked about technology, but we also have been working very much on innovation and technology. How can you manage flow of people, entering the port, for instance? How can you advise them not to go to that restaurant if it's packed in order to move to another restaurant? So we do have, we are assuming a lot of commitment on innovation. We do have an agenda on innovation. And basically, we want to introduce innovation, not because, just because, yes, it's good, it's sexy, it's because we need that in order to provide a seamless experience, also a seamless travel experience, and at the end of the day to better manage locals, because it's impossible to travel in Lisbon if you are not happy to live in Lisbon, right? And so locals are really one of the key shareholders that we have to address as well.
True. I mean, Lisbon was not made for cars or big tour buses. It just wasn't built for that.
You have a point there.
You can't widen the streets there.
No.
Where are you going to be a year from now in terms of the numbers? Where are you going to be a year from now in terms of the quality of the experience?
Numbers are important, but I honestly, it's not our biggest priority. This year will be 50% of the revenues of 2019, pretty much in line with what happens with other countries in Europe that rely on tourism. Next year, we are expecting to be 75%, and 2023 will be identical. The numbers will be pretty much identical to the ones that we had back in 2019. So we'll take a while.
But in the process of doing that, you learn while you earn. It's an evolving education.
Exactly. So we do have these figures, we do have these goals, but we don't want to go back to reality of 2019. We want a better tourism.
My thanks to Secretary Marquez, to Christian Woodman, to Julia Simpson, and to Roger Dow. And my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, no passport needed. Just log on to petergreenberg.com.
Special thanks to our sponsors at Clear. Enroll in Clear at clearme.com/Peter and zip through busy airports nationwide.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Eye on Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.